Rainmaker FM.
Three, two.
And now, for members only, I'm your host, Sean Jackson. Membership sites are about community, creating an online environment for those that share similar interests and passions. But for all their strengths, there exists a layer of abstraction that lacks the physical and emotional engagement found from being in physical proximity to each other. This is why many membership sites conduct live events, from meetups to conferences to workshops and more. And if you run a membership site and are not conducting a live event, then you need to strongly consider doing it. Live events allow you to extend your authority within your community while providing you a unique platform to fundamentally help your members enrich their lives. And as someone who has attended numerous industry events over the years, I can truly say that they have made a huge impact in my personal career and development. Case in point, I met Brian Clark, the founder of Copyblogger and my eventual business partner, 7 years ago at a marketing event in Austin where he was giving a presentation. I had followed Brian online at copyblogger.com and was a huge fan of his teaching sales course. But hearing him speak in person had a profound impact, and I knew that if I was ever to have a chance to talk with him in person and potentially form a business partnership with him, that event was my opportunity. So after he spoke, the event had a reception, and I summoned the courage to speak with Brian. And being anxious and a little intimidated, I began to prattle off platitudes and the pretext for my conversation. But my anxiety quickly manifested itself into a rapid-fire monologue of comments and observations, never once stopping to elicit a response from him. And after 15 minutes of this one-sided verbal fire hose, I had to stop and catch my breath. And in that moment of silence, Brian looked at me with an inquisitive expression and said, "Who the f*** are you again?" In this episode of Members Only, I will interview Jessica Frick, who not only plans all of our membership events at the company, but is my co-host. Jessica will walk you through not only the reasons for having a live event, but how to start small and the ways to put together an experience that has meaningful impact for your members. Welcome to Members Only, everyone. I'm your host, Sean Jackson, and I'm joined, as always, by the fastidious Jessica Frick. Jessica, how the frick are you today?
I am fastidious. How the Jackson are you?
I am recovering, actually.
I bet. You had a whirlwind week.
Well, so did you. And for the audience, just so you know, what we're referencing is that we recently held our Digital Commerce Summit in Denver, and it was absolutely phenomenal. Beyond just having cake there, which was a huge thing in the sense that you could see this, you know, famous band right there in front of you. More importantly, though, and this is what I really thought, Jess, I've gone to marketing conferences for over a decade. And what struck me about our conference was how the speakers really focused not on the tip tactics, techniques, research, and tools, but really on how to apply all of that to generate money online. When you say this, there's the general theme?
Absolutely. And that was intentional in the programming.
Yeah. I mean, I was sitting there. I mean, it was funny because I was going to our own conference and I actually wanted to watch every single speaker because they were fascinating in how they were able to translate all of this online marketing into real financial results. And if you could not make it there, I'm sorry because it was awesome. But Jess, don't we have something for people that could not make it to the live event?
Absolutely. We have a virtual ticket if you guys want to pick up copies of the presentations and watch them at your leisure. Visit digitalcommerce.com/summit and you can get to the link or /virtual-summit and that'll take you directly to the virtual ticket.
Yeah, I really highly recommend to go and purchase that because there were some very powerful, powerful presentations from Rand Fishkin and about how he grew his business and to all these other speakers. I mean, Chris Lima gave a phenomenal one about WordPress. So highly recommend you going after it. Okay, so The reason that we're pushing all of this is because Jessica and I were at the conference, and it started to occur to me that, you know, this was and has been an important part of our ecosystem. And I thought, you know, if you're running a membership site, something that isn't talked about a lot is how to put on a live event. So Jessica was kind of looking at me blankly like, uh-huh. Because for those that don't know, Jessica actually put on this huge event and has been doing it for 3 years for us. This mammoth, multi-day, tons of people, lots of content and speakers. So Jess, can I interview you about live events and membership communities? Could we do that for this episode?
Absolutely.
I want to
But if I tell the truth, you can't get rid of me. Because the truth is, like, I make it look magic, but really anybody could do it.
Ah, oh, I see. You mean you aren't the wizard that comes up with your little magic wand and magically makes it appear? You mean that an actual human being can do it? Okay.
Well, as I always tell you, my job is about making sure that you don't even see me.
That's
it's
right.
It's about making all the pieces come together. And when I'm doing it right, it just looks like it all happened.
That's true. And it did. It did. If you went to the conference, the only time you probably saw Jessica was when she was running up and down the side to make sure everything was going perfect.
I got my miles in, that's for sure.
That's right. So let's talk about this, Jess. Let's get into the meat of this. Okay. First off, you know, we started the company with a community called Teaching Sales and then Third Tribe. And so we've always had a membership community tied to our company. And it was only a few years ago when we made the leap to a live event. So let's go with that. Why do a live event? If you're an online creature and maybe a little bit of an introvert, not really comfortable in big social situations, the thought of a live event could scare the heck out of you. So why do a live event to begin with, Jess?
Well, we did start doing our full live events with a mini conference a few years ago, but there was actually something before that. The first thing that we actually did it as a company was we hosted a party at South by Southwest because we knew a lot of our community would be there and we wanted to give them a chance to meet us. And so we did that for a couple of years before we actually put on our first live event. Is that required? No. But I think that there's something important to be said about starting small.
Yeah.
You don't want to just come out the gate with, you know, a 2,200 seat venue.
Right. Yeah, trust us. But that's an important part because you're right, because now I remember that because, you know, we had always done our company meeting at South by Southwest and then we just decided to have a party, right? In fact, when I first met you was at our very first kind of customer gathering when we had that huge line down the street trying to come into that bar that you had gotten for us. And it was really there that we're like, holy cow, our community was here and they wanted to engage with us. And we did that year after year after year. And you're right. I forgot. That was really kind of the first, if you will, live event was just getting all of our friends and customers and people who follow us just into a bar to meet us.
And I think that, you know, those results can be extrapolated beyond South by Southwest, which we don't attend anymore because most of our community doesn't go to that anymore.
Right.
But I think that there's something to be said for hosting just a small meetup for your community when you're all together. I'll pick on Chris Ducker. Chris Ducker was one of our speakers at this event, and he very smartly piggybacked. A lot of his community got together, you know, alumni of his events, Tropical Think Tank, and from his community, Upreneur, they all met up and hung out and did crazy things while they were at Digital Commerce Summit.
Mm.
So he didn't even host his own event, but he got his community together and still had his own quasi-IRL event for his membership.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really important to do stuff like that when you're able. And I mean, that was the most budget-conscious and brilliant approach to handling it, because his community still got together, and you cannot replace that sort of in-person intimacy that you get when you actually meet people.
Yeah.
And, you know, order apps and, you know, appetizers, I should say, because apps mean something different. But, you know, like order some appetizers and have some drinks and talk about things.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people who listen to this are like, oh, but I'm an introvert. I hate people. Well, maybe not a lot of people with that last comment. But, you know, we always program our events to be introvert friendly. And that's why I think it's important to make sure that you consider those personality types when you're planning your first smaller thing. Some people just don't feel comfortable walking up to you and saying, "Hey, I'm Bob from coolmembership.com." You know,
right, so right, right.
Make it easy for them to come and immediately feel a part of.
Yeah.
And don't have to break the bank with that, but you can scale up to get better results.
But you know, that's a great point, because there's a lot of industry conferences that go on, and sometimes making a conscious effort just to say to your community, "I'm going to be here. I'm going to do something special for the community. I'm picking up a bar tab. I'm ordering food." I know for Brian Gardner, I mean, he used to just go and say, "Hey, if you're part of the Studio Press community, let's go have lunch together." Right. And so there was a lunch that he used to do at South By. I mean, and I think that's a great point, because that really can give you some confidence, and it's easy to start small by just interacting through an existing event, right, to your community saying, "I will be there. I'm doing something at this time period. Come and join us." That way you can start to see if your community wants to come, right? You know, kind of what it feels like. And more importantly, you all have something in common. Right. And that's the key. I think even for introverts or extroverts, the key is the common thread that runs through your membership community, and seeing that manifest itself in the physical world, where you can talk to other like-minded people, can really bridge that uncomfortableness of meeting new and total strangers, because you do share something in common.
Well, of course. And further, while we're obviously in this to make money, I think we all share that altruistic desire to see our members succeed.
Yeah.
And when you are part of a group and you feel that intimacy, I mean, we do business with people we know, like, and trust. You know them better. You hopefully like them better. You trust them more, because now you've seen the guy behind the screen, you know, and you're more likely to reach out and work together to be better.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's absolutely true, because it does put a human face, if you will, to a very intangible idea, which is the online world that you're probably spending the majority of your time on. Okay, I got that. All right. So I think there is a case to be made for having a live event, primarily around the things Jessica talked about. I think you don't have to try to go big to begin with. You can take small incremental steps and trying to do little things that can let your community know that you are doing something in person, a live event, but it doesn't have to be huge, right? Okay. So let's get into the mechanics of it, Jess. Let's say that I've been going to events for years and I've got a little community, and we always kind of meet up at XYZ conference, or we are getting together on a monthly or quarterly basis at some local meetup, et cetera. So we've done that, right? And we feel like, okay, we can take the next step. We can really start to put this into motion as a little bit bigger than just a whole bunch of people sitting around a bar having drinks and talking about things. What next? What are the mechanics? How do we get into this?
So let's say you want to get to something bigger. Obviously, you're not going to charge people to come to your meetup. But if you wanted to host a workshop or, you know, a multi-day event to go even bigger, you need to get a budget together. Sometimes it's not going to be profitable. But, you know, there was one year where we spent more than we made, because Brian Clark felt very strongly that this is a PR event.
Mm-hmm.
The value is in the PR and the community building. And so he urged me to spend more on things like food or, you know, comfort or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And I personally believe it paid back in dividends. But you still need to know what you're willing to spend and what you hope to make, depending on your unique needs.
Yeah.
The first step I would say is figure out how many people you're going to have. You know, are you going to do something where you cap it at 25? Are you going to do something where you cap it at 100, 500? And then work backwards from there to decide what a reasonable ticket price would be. You're going to want to look at other events in your sector and figure out about what they charge.
Right. And I think going small, though, I think to your point, though, I, if you cap it, let's say, at 100 or 150 people or even 25 people, that is great, because it's a limit, right? And as we've talked about before, limitations can be great strengths, especially given the fact that once you hit that limit, that's it, right? I mean, so there's both a built-in incentive to sign up now, but also because it becomes more manageable. If you know that you're limiting to 100 people, let's say, then you can think about those 100 people and not have to worry, well, what if I'm going to have 150 people, right? Or what if I only have 50 people? Because generally, I think when you set a goal, you'll know your community enough that you'll have a reasonable idea how many will attend. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that's fair. So you've got the scarcity in play, which helps you sell tickets. But when you're finding a venue, it's a whole lot easier to find one for less people than it is to find one for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true. And that's a big part of the cost too, right? Is that when you're thinking about doing a live event, because here's the what I would always, and again, I've actually created up an event called the State of Search. If you've ever gone to it, that was my idea. And it started as a monthly meeting, and after a couple of monthly meetings and the room was packed to capacity, we're like, we could do a one day. And so, you know, we went through one day, then a two day, et cetera. And what I found though, is there is a formula for starting kind of from that meeting to an actual live event at a venue. And I think that really comes down to combining huge value in the ticket through things like training, right? Because if you can put a training component on it, then you've got an event plus training and the value extrapolates from there.
I'd say that's absolutely correct. And I've seen some events even go so far as to work with accredited agencies to assign continuing education credits. You might get in touch with one of them, of course, because, for example, with real estate people, they're going to need to go anyway, so they might as well come to yours. But you don't have to if what you're offering is unique. So with Digital Commerce Summit, we'll take that for example. We didn't have continuing education courses through an accredited agency, but we didn't have to because the information that we were providing is of the type that you can't get anywhere else. And it was also so fine-tuned in the programming process that we were then and we are now completely confident that it directly worked toward the needs of our ideal attendee.
Right. And I think that's important because when you're looking at how you're going to structure this conference, right, the typical one is a one day. That's always a good one to start out with, a one day, some speakers lined up, a fairly inexpensive venue. But on top of that, you may find a discount, right, if you get it for 2 days from the place, right? Because, of course, you could come in and say, we're going to do a one-day workshop, maybe a half day, maybe a full day. And then the next day you have that venue and you may find, and Jessica, you'll tell me, but you may find that they're much more willing to rent it to you for 2 days at a discount than one day at a premium.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of other stuff that goes into it. So let's pick on, you know, one of the first big live events that we did, which was Agent Press, and it was at a hotel in Southern California, notoriously expensive. But we actually got the room for free because we served meals. And hotels, and this place was glorious. I mean, the views were unmatched, and people still talk about the food to this day. But a lot of times, hotels will make more money off of food and beverage, and they're willing to give you the space for free if you buy people lunch.
Oh, wow. That helps.
When you're making your budget together and figuring out what your ticket price will be, you could charge more if you're including meals.
Mm.
But that opens another can of worms because now you've got vegans and vegetarians and, you know, all sorts of other issues related to dietary needs. And you have to accommodate those. But a lot of events will send out a pre-event survey just to make sure that they address those. Or perhaps you could ask people to pick from a fixed menu ahead of time. There are a lot of different ways you can go about it. But most of the time, when you see an event serving food, they're getting the room for free.
Right. And that's important because, again, when you're looking at that first event, you're deciding, should I serve food? Should I not serve food? And again, looking at the budgetary considerations, maybe by serving food, you can lower, you have no cost for the space. Or if you don't want to have to deal with food your first time around, then you can come through and then you will be looking at the cost of space. And again, smaller venues are easier to find than the really large ones. Is that generally correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, one group that I find does it really well is SMX.
Mm.
When you go to SMX, which is, you know, an SEO media conference, they have something called Birds of a Feather Lunch. And you sign up for your lunch table based on a topic of interest. Perhaps you want to learn more about pay-per-click, or perhaps you want to discuss, you know, SEO mechanics, or perhaps, you know, you want to talk about backlinks. You sign up for a seat at a lunch table with that topic, and now you're sitting with a group of 10 strangers, and you're all talking about something.
Oh, that is awesome.
It's a great way to network and meet other people in the industry and work together on something, knowing what your lunch topic is going to be.
Yeah. And that's great too, because I've seen other conferences, they'll call them a labs, right? Where instead of food, it'll be like at these designated times, we're going to have an expert sitting at the table and everyone can come around and talk to the expert, right? So that if somebody was speaking maybe in the morning, in the afternoon, they have kind of their own little round table discussion. And I think, again, it goes to adding value to that ticket price, right? It goes to adding value that they're not going to be able to find in the online space as readily as they would in person. Would you say that's fair?
Absolutely. And, you know, Sean, I think I've told you this, but I know I mentioned it to a couple people at the event who graciously commented on my temperament, saying that I didn't look stressed out at all. But what they didn't see is I get stressed out before the event, because what I'm thinking of are all the people who spent money to be there, mm-hmm. the people who paid for the airfare, the hotel, you know, they're taking time off to be there. And I get worked up thinking about that investment and making sure that every detail of our events exceeds that investment.
Sure. But I mean, to put it in context, you'd probably go through the same amount of stress and effort if you were planning a dinner party at your house, right? I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, if you think about it, if you've ever had a dinner party for just a few friends, more than another couple, let's say, you have a few people over, you're stressing about these things, right? Where they do we have enough space? Do we have enough food? Are they going to enjoy themselves? I mean, so again, this is not a magical wizard of hiring and a professional event planner to put all this together. You can do it. If you've ever planned a party, you can do this, but you're going to have to put in, like Jessica indicated, a lot of time and attention to make it feel welcoming before they even step in the door.
I think there's a lot to be said for pre-conference communication. One thing that we did was we actually set up a Facebook group for attendees. So they were able to talk amongst themselves before the event and, you know, perhaps plan lunches or whatever. If you're doing something smaller, you might not need that. But I have seen other events do that same approach, but with different reasons. And it works out really well.
Right.
Let's say, you know, you have decided to go with a one-day event. And this one-day event is going to have a couple different workshops that are interactive. And, you know, you're going to have yourself speak because, you know, you're the head of your membership community. And you're going to have somebody else from your team speak for a little bit, or perhaps another industry expert. And it all is so interactive. You want to give these people a way to stay in touch afterward that doesn't require people exchanging business cards. Some way to carry on the value far beyond the end of your one-day event. And some people will do that with apps. Personally, we tried that 1 year. I didn't care for it. there are other ways you could do it, but the larger your event gets, the harder it is to establish that intimacy before and after.
Yeah. But I think it's okay to keep it small too. I mean, at the end of the day, you are trying to do something that is manageable by yourself as well as intimate and meaningful to your member community. And I think it gives it a lot of power, actually, if you start small, maybe even keep it small, right? Because again, it is something magical about people interacting with like minds together. Right. And that to me always blows me away, is that those relationships that form from those type of ad hoc communication, when you're just sitting there going, oh, what do you do? Oh, my gosh, I can't believe. And I think as a membership site owner, you know, this helps a lot because it gives you something else. It gives you sometimes more honest feedback from your member community than you probably get online. I know that seems a little weird, but sometimes people feel a little less comfortable sending you an email or commenting in a post than if they could come up to you and say, hey, I have this thing and I want to talk to you about this thing. I think by listening and engaging, oh my gosh, the amount of things that you could benefit from that just one moment in time could really build an entire business from.
Absolutely. And you know, there is one other very cool part about hosting a live event that we haven't discussed yet, the recordings. So I went to an event held by Annie Cushing, Analytics.com. She's absolutely amazing. And it was a multi-day event. And I sat in the front row, total teacher's pet, because I was really excited about it. But the front row is funny because she now sells a course with the recordings from that live workshop. And you can see the back of my head in front of her the whole time. But she was brilliant with the way that she did it. You know, I was able to go to this event and it had an incredible workbook so I could follow along with all of her material, which was very carefully planned out. Highly technical stuff. But she planned it in such a way that each section built on the one before it. So you didn't want to miss a minute. And, you know, she did serve lunch, but it wasn't really the focus. What was the focus was getting back in the room. You were excited to be a part of it. And then a few months later, she actually sold that course virtually.
Yes.
With the workbook. And it was about the same, maybe less than what I paid to be there live, but I got it before everybody. So I didn't feel like I lost any value to it. And she still sells it to this day. That workshop was a couple years ago.
Oh.
So you are going to be, if you record your sessions and you record the material, you are creating marketable collateral for your community as well.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to be able to be there live. That's why we did the virtual ticket this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same experience, so you're going to charge a little less, but it's worth every penny that you charge for just the content.
And that's a great, I mean, that, Jessica, that's brilliant, because again, think about it. You're running a membership community. You've decided to make the leap to do a live event. And you're like, wow, is this a pure marketing cost, right? Am I going to try to make money from it? Or maybe it just breaks even knowing that I'm going to make money by selling the virtual conference later on, right? Now, here's why I think that's also important, because it makes you focus on the programming, because if you know you're going to repurpose the programming later, then you're going to put a lot more emphasis, focus, and attention on the actual content matter, which also means that it's going to be much sharper and much more professional to that audience, because you're probably thinking, what is the story that I want to tell? What are the key elements I want speakers to address? What are the elements of information that I can then repurpose later and use it in a digital good product that I can then sell to my membership community or external from my membership community? And knowing that makes the content so much more powerful, because you're focusing like a laser beam for how you use it later. That's why, I mean, again, I will say this about our conference. I mean, I literally flew from one marketing conference to our conference the next day. And, you know, again, I was sitting there going, oh, this is just going to be another thing. You know, people talking about the same thing I just heard, you know, yesterday. But Brian had spent so much time and attention thinking about the stories and the key learnings that he wanted the audience to get, that the content was off the hook. I mean,
yeah.
I was like, hey, I can't talk to you now, Jess. I need to go in there and actually listen to this stuff, because I was learning and I was one of the people putting it on. So,
you know,
was
I might get in trouble for sharing this, but you know, one of the most annoying things about working with Brian Clark is that he is right so often.
Yeah.
I hate that. You know, the first event we did, I'm like, we need multiple tracks. He's like, no, single track. Sure enough, that's the thing that everybody loved. You don't have to pick between tracks.
Yeah.
For this event, he actually changed the focus from previous ones. We didn't actually focus on content marketing, which is what our company was known for a long time. And he wanted to focus strictly on digital commerce and, you know, online businesses, not so much the content, but the online aspects of it. And there was, you know, a lot about the content as well. But we were kind of pushing him to say, listen, can we talk to the, you know, content marketing people and tell them that they're still going to have this? And he said, no, it's not for them.
Yeah.
And that cost us sales. I'm sure of it, but it didn't matter, because everybody who came to our event thought the content was on point.
Yeah.
So my advice is, don't try to be all things to all people.
Right.
Because if you want to, you know, focus your presentations on, you know, a general matter, understand that there are going to be people that feel let down at the end. If you laser focus it, like we did with our most recent one, everyone in the room is going to be nodding their head and engaged and, you know, like you, Sean, wanting to just run in and listen to every single presentation, because you're getting a lot out of it.
Right. And I think at the end of the day, that's where the live event component of a membership site really resonates, because it does add huge value. It makes something that is unique to your community, but it also brings together the entire package, if you will, of the value proposition that you give to your online audience. It's not just the digital content, it's that in-personal engagement, it's that content that they can only really get through that particular event. I think that gives a huge compelling reason why almost every membership site, in my opinion, should be considering or doing some sort of live event. Doesn't have to be giant like what we do, but it certainly has to be something that really brings that community together, that is laser focused on their particular needs, on their particular desires, so that you can put the content there for them and maybe repackage it later for additional ways to spread the message. Jess, what are the parting thoughts for this episode? Because I really wanted to cover this topic. You've worked so hard over the years to do this. You've done an amazing job. You know you do good when nobody complains, right? So so I think you did fantastic. Thank you from everyone who attended as well as from the company. But what would be a parting thought that you'd like to share with our audience on how they should consider or do it? Or what really is the thing that matters most when considering live events?
Just breathe. Don't be afraid to ask questions from other people who have done it. You know, I know for me personally, I'm always willing to help you get your rest. You're going to need it.
That's it. Well, speaking of rest, I'm going to need to go back and recover some more. And so, folks, we'll catch you next time on the next episode of Members Only.
Thanks for listening.